All right. We've got our very special guest in the studio. I am joined today by Eva Wiles, a London-based New Zealand author. She's sitting right in front of me. Hello, Eva.
Kia ora. Thank you for having me.
Nice to be back. How long are you back in Aotearoa for?
I've been back for nearly 2 weeks, and I've got another two to go. Yeah. So I'm right in the halfway point right now.
Has it been nice getting away from UK winter?
It has been, although I have had the awful luck of I arrived in Wellington during the sewage leak.
Oh, no.
And then once I got up to Tamaki, it was quite cloudy. So yeah. I haven't had the most sun, but it's still better than the winter.
Yeah, very much the normal New Zealand summer these days is rain and infrastructure failures.
Unfortunately, yeah.
Yeah. And you've got a new book out, A Delivery Woman. It's a collection of 13 short stories that dive into the complexities of human connection, the pursuit of meaning, and modern-day loneliness. Is that a good way to describe it? How would you bill it?
Yeah, I'd say that's... I mean, it's so hard with a short story collection because they're so varied. But if there are any themes throughout them, I'd say those are them. But it wasn't written with the intention of there being like a singular theme.
Yeah.
So they are kind of tied together through human connection, but purely because I think those characters are kind of all navigating various weird things to do with just being a human.
Yeah, like a through line I sort of picked up reading it was very much this sort of making sort of space for ordinary lives and all these ordinary little moments that happen, which was quite beautiful.
No, exactly. I'd say it's just as much about people trying to sort of enjoy little ordinary things happening, and that sort of the strangeness of what can happen in just a regular day, as much as it is about the sort of darker loneliness side as well.
So. Yeah, loneliness was a that stuck with me as well.
Mm.
Was that something you intended to explore when writing it, or did it kind of surface as you were doing the work?
It very much surfaced after. And it wasn't until I was sort of working on like a project description to send to my agent that the theme sort of emerged. And I think it's probably because it came about naturally because I write short stories to try and like feel connected to other people or characters. So I think it's kind of naturally leaning into that, I suppose. But yeah, it wasn't something I set out to do initially.
Yeah.
It's quite funny when it does come around and you're like, oh, didn't realise it was about that.
Do you think writing and reading is kind of a balm for loneliness? I know when I do it regularly, I feel less shit.
I definitely think so. And I think that's like the main drive. I've always been a big reader since I was little. And I think it is a huge balm for it. Or if you're feeling stressed, or I think it's very much one of the few moments in life where you get to sort of be transported outside of your own head. So that must be a bit of relief sometimes.
Yeah, like it's very much escapism for me, reading, especially fiction. And yeah, when I'm stressed or feeling heavy, I try and do it more because it definitely makes me feel better. And I think with reading as well, you're using, it's not like you're just staring at a, you know, video feed.
Yeah.
You're using, you know, your brain to sort of imagine what is on the paper.
Yeah, I think it's like equal parts reader and writer. I think there's often a misconception that the writer's like done all the meaning making, but I actually think it's like such a half-half, and like good writing kind of gives the reader that agency as well.
Yeah, like it's actually quite an interactive thing.
Yeah, totally. And also people read stuff completely differently. I help like host a book club in London, and it's crazy how many different readings people take from a book.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, what I really enjoyed about your book and the books I like, share this as well, is how you describe these sort of just everyday things people do. Like it's such a human, normal, and it makes you feel, connected to other people.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got a really nice sense of observation, like all these little just, you know, the silly little things people do and their gestures and, you know, how they sit down on a bench or...
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you do such good observational writing? Do you keep a little creepy notebook with things written down in it, or are you just, you know, good at creating these out of your mind? How do you do it?
It's a good question. I don't have a creepy notebook, but probably like an unphysical one exists in my head. Because you definitely do. I remember somebody saying that writers are like magpies, like you're constantly sort of collecting little bits and pieces and charms and sort of quirks about people. So I definitely think, all the characters in Delivery Woman are a mashup of things that I've seen or felt or, you know, witnessed. But they sort of come together very much in a fictional sense. You still build... Often a character sort of comes from one quirk or one action and then you sort of write into that and then they become their own person and you have to sort of honour that.
Yeah. Speaking of characters, you name some of them but not all of them.
Mm.
Why? How? What's the thinking there?
Who hadn't I named? That's a great... I didn't realise I'd done that. That's good.
Well, in the first one, you got sort of the woman and the son.
Oh, yes. Yeah. That is right. No, the very first one is called Mother And. Yeah. I think for that story in particular, I was really interested in the role that the mother plays and this idea of it's like it's called Mother And because it's sort of like leaving, like the natural word that would come next would be mother and son or mother and father. Mm. But she's kind of alone in that story. So I wanted to sort of lean into the roles that they play, and they play quite traditional roles in that family makeup. Like the boy is quite disengaged and the father is very much like work focused. Mm. And she's very much quite solitary in her sort of spiritual navigations of the world. So I kind of wanted to lean into that, I suppose. So that, but it was more of a subconscious choice. And then, so yeah, I guess it comes down to when, what you're trying to do with a character, I suppose, whether or not you want that distance.
Yeah. Interesting about the Mother End thing, because you and I was filling in the blanks. I sort of saw it more as we were finding about her relationship and friendships with other people outside of the family unit and obviously the funeral they're at and, yeah, the sort of all these complex things that make up her life beyond just motherhood. That was my sort of...
Well, there's that too. Yeah. That's the sort of other side of the coin, is the father and the son aren't noticing the complexities of her very full life and the fact that she's the type of person who does sit down and watch this funeral through to the end and then observe the cleaner. Like, she's a very observant character, and I don't think the people in her immediate family unit take notice of that.
Yeah. Do you think we see other people as fully as we should, or do you think we need to sort of spend a bit more time thinking about what other people have going on? Or
I think there's always room to think about more about what people have going on, because I mean I'm guilty of it. You always think that your life is always filled with complications and big things happening, and everybody has that same level of richness going on in their mind in terms of bad stuff, good stuff, family connections, all sorts. I definitely think in like the family unit as well, we tend to look and be like, okay, this is my mum. And I still remember like realising when I was younger that my parents had like lived this whole life where they weren't parents.
Yeah, I remember that realisation, like being like, oh, they're just people kind of just working it out.
Yeah, because I think when you get older and you're like, would I have kids one day? And then you're like, wow, they were like me.
Yeah, they didn't even have Google. They
just exactly.
Had nowhere to ask for questions.
So I think there was definitely that I wanted to explore in this story in terms of like, yeah, the fullness of everybody's life, even when they do get given these titles like mum and dad.
Yeah. Do you like writing about places as well? I mean, in the book, some of them are sort of explicit, like Wellington was very clear, one of the ones set there, and others were a bit more vague.
Yeah, I'd say place is probably the first thing that comes, which is quite an odd thing, I think. When I speak with other writers, it tends to be plot or character that comes first. But for me, place has always been the initial thing, and sometimes it is named and sometimes it's a very fictionalized place. It just depends on what I've sort of imagined at that point. So some stories are very, I've sort of tied in to the like a certain mood of a place, like Wellington features in a couple of stories and it's a very specific sort of mood of Wellington in my mind and sort of exploring that. And then other stories are completely fictional, or in some cases they're real places, but I've decided that I don't want to name them as explicitly. It Waits comes to mind, that's set in just sort of a generic beach town, because I kind of wanted to tie into that.
Yeah, and I feel like, I don't know, New Zealand readers often like trying to guess where something might be. Yeah. Like, I've had a few conversations with people about Laura Vincent's Hood's Landing, like, which part of Auckland is it?
Yes.
And is it the West Coast? Is it up,
I know.
You know, south? And same with Gretchen Bowden by Rebecca K. Riley.
Yes,
like,
yeah.
I sat down with a map and tried to work out where their apartment building was in central Auckland.
It is good fun to try and figure that stuff out because it does feel like a little treasure hunt.
Yeah, and just, yeah, be a bit, yeah, subtle about it so maybe people can have their own theory or work it out.
Yeah, totally.
And a lot of your places are very ordinary, like flats, workplaces, funeral homes, gas stations.
Mm-hmm.
What is it about these just mundane places that, yeah, interest you?
I don't know. I think it's just always been, I think it's where people live most of their lives. So I've always been like, this is what's immediately in front of me.
Yeah.
So that's probably the initial answer. But also I think people in these quite ordinary settings, I'm drawn to the kind of things that they do and they think about because, I don't know, I feel like fiction with these grand plots and grand characters tends to, it just doesn't draw me in as much. So as a reader, that's the kind of fiction I'm drawn to. So it kind of makes sense that it happens in the stuff I'm writing as well.
Do you do a lot of sort of people watching?
Yes. I mean, I don't know this about myself, but my friend often reminds me of how much I like just sit there and look around. Yeah, I love to people watch. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm the same. I could just, yeah. My favorite, yeah, cafes are the ones where you can sit outside and just watch the street theatre.
Totally. There's amazing street theatre in London as well. Oh. It's like on a whole different scale.
Yeah, and it's the population's, you know, tenfold and there's just so many more characters. And
no, completely. It's great.
And it's quite a cinematic place, I think, because, I mean, we've, you know, been seeing it in film and then you finally go there and you think, oh, it's real.
Yeah, totally.
How was it? When did you move to London?
It's coming up 3 years.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
Yeah, what part of the city are you in?
I'm in Camberwell, Peckham sort of side, so southeast, which I love. I love it down there.
Did you find it much of a culture shock or adjustment, sort of getting used to the weather and the people and the...
Yeah, I would say definitely first year was rough. And there's like no better way to put it that it was hard.
Yeah.
Obviously there was really beautiful times during that too, and I definitely second guessed staying there, and pretty much like on the mark of 1 year it started to get better, and it just sort of felt like the things that, you know, you sort of sow the seeds and they start to sprout. So yeah, it's really lovely now. I love it, and I feel like I've got a really strong writing community there, got a really strong like friendship group. I enjoy my work, which is good. But yeah, it takes time.
Did it have much of an impact on your writing practice?
Yes, I think it is different because I think I really started writing properly when I came back to New Zealand during COVID, and then I went and did my master's, which then is, I was doing it full time, and then following that kind of did bits here and there while working and then moved to London. So London's been the first time where I've really kind of, it's also where the book got published. So it's the first time I've sort of thought of myself as a writer and thought of it as like a practice, more than sort of something that I'm beginning. It feels like a little bit more established, which is nice.
You're like, oh, this is my job.
Well, I wish it was my job. It's still very much a side.
Yeah.
I don't want to say hustle, but... Yeah.
Another vocation.
Yes, it's something that I do on lunch breaks and after work.
Yeah.
Which I would love to be able to afford to work part-time and write part-time in a dream world, but we'll see.
Yeah, because that's the thing. Most authors have like at least 10 other jobs usually to pay the bills.
Totally. I remember when we were finishing our masters and the advice we were given was that it was a portfolio career and you had to sort of have all these things going on.
Yeah.
Which so far is proving true.
Yeah, it's so like that. And you were at the Institute of Modern Letters program in Wellington. What was that like?
It was amazing. It was, I mean, it's just one of those rare times where you have time, you have community, and like very rigorous feedback. So it was a lot of pressure. I definitely remember feeling like a lot of pressure to make the most of it because it's like such a, you only really do that once.
Yeah.
But it was amazing. I think you have you're with 9 other people in a classroom and you're workshopping each other's stuff every week. It was incredible.
Such a luxury, like, and for a whole year.
Whole year, like, yeah. Oh. It was a complete whirlwind, but so amazing. I highly recommend it to everybody.
I know a few people have done that and it sounds fabulous, and I would love to be able to relocate to Wellington for a year. Did you grow up in Wellington? Or?
I did grow up in Wellington, yeah, which you can probably tell because quite a few, I'd say most of the New Zealand place stories are Wellington ones, but yeah, I grew up there. My whole life, actually. Yeah. I just had to think about that for some reason.
What do you love about Wellington?
I think it's got a lot of character. Sort of, I kept, like, it was so funny going back there because that was the first place I landed. I kept trying to, like, characterize it and be like, oh, it's like this and it's like this. And then something would happen that completely sort of rejected that. So I like that. I love the hills. I love the coastline. I like driving around. But I've lived in Auckland as well, and I actually love Auckland too. So yeah. I think the size of Auckland is a little bit better for me.
Yeah. Where do you make a point of visiting when you come back?
Do you mean like
any shops, restaurants, suburbs, parks, beaches?
In Tamaki or Wellington?
Let's do Tamaki first.
Okay. Great question. Dom Road for food.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I really wanted to go out to Piha. But the weather just hasn't been quite right yet. Yeah. But maybe I'll try to go out anyway. Other than that, it's mainly just going and seeing friends, going to their houses and saying hello.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
Yeah. What about Wellington? Where are some favourite spots down there?
Wellington, love to go get some Malaysian food on Left Bank.
Yeah.
Love to go round to, I think it's called the Eastern Walkway, which is around by Sea Turn, and you walk around the nude beach.
Yeah.
And I just love that walk up there. So I went there with my friend Millie, and that was lovely. Princess Bay too, but I didn't make it there because of the sewage.
Yes, yeah.
I also love going out to Marketer in Wellington because my dad has like this little shack across the river there.
Yeah.
So that's pretty special.
Do you do any book shopping when you're back here? Or
I do. It's hard though, you know, because books are a lot more expensive here is what I've realised.
Yeah, so really.
They're like 10 quid in the UK, which is about $20. And then you can get lots of secondhand books. I work in a secondhand bookstore as well. So I kind of have too many books at the moment. And I come back here and I really want to buy lots, but then they're like $40.
I know.
And I want to, bit of a budget, unfortunately, but I will be getting a couple that I've been wanting to read that I know I can't get over there.
So. What are you going to get?
Funnily enough, I'm going to get an old copy of The Secret Heart by Irene Beautré, which is an old poetry collection, which I've been interested in getting, but I haven't been able to get my hands on it in the UK. So
you found it here?
I found it here, yeah.
Where from?
It's available through Te Haringa Waka University Press and also some secondhand websites as well.
Amazing. What are you reading at the moment? Anything?
I'm actually reading Audition by Pip Adam, which has been amazing because I love all of Pip Adam's other stuff. About halfway through that, it's really going in so many different turns that I didn't expect. And I'm about to start The Book of Guilt by Catherine Chidji, which I've heard really amazing things about.
Same.
Yeah. Cool. So I'm excited about that one.
Amazing. And what are some formative books for you?
Probably. Well, back to Irene Beautré, I'd say Bug Week, which is another collection of short stories. Really incredible writing. I mean, you can tell that she's a poet in it as well because the like attention to every single line is so beautiful. I love Temporary by Hilary Lichter, which is a very surreal novel about sort of a temp worker who like takes on a whole new meaning. She's like a temporary barnacle on a rock, and then she's like a temporary pirate, and like it's this sort of bid for permanence in this world, which is very fantastical. But I just think what she does with language in that book is so amazing.
Wow.
What else? Oh, I love 10th of December by George Saunders, another short story collection. And I Hold a Wolf by the Ears by Laura Vandenberg is another great short story collection.
Wow, cool. I will put all of these in the show notes so you guys can all make sure you can write them down and keep track because we love good recommendations. What else are you consuming, enjoying, liking at the moment, creatively, personally?
Great question. I've been, I haven't been watching much, but I've been watching, weirdly, this TV show called Fallout, just because.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Because it's the person who I'm staying with up in Tamaki has Amazon Prime, and I'm like, cool, I'll put something on. Yeah. And just weirdly gotten a bit addicted to it. But no. It's like super outrageous. I didn't know anything about it before I started watching
it. It's quite wild.
Yeah. But I'm enjoying it. What else have I been consuming? I still just listen to lots of sort of old jazz music, and I love listening to film scores and stuff like that, but I can't actually think of any that come to mind.
Yeah. No, that's amazing. And while you're back here, you're doing a book tour.
Yes.
Where are you going?
So I had a talk with Pip Adam in Wellington last Monday, I believe. No, last Tuesday. And then I'm talking at Time Out Books tomorrow night with Sarade De Silva.
Love Sarade. Shout out Sarade.
I know. I love her treasure. Too. I know. I can't wait to do that with her. So that's going to be lovely. And then I'm going to go down to Christchurch to Scorpio Books, and I'm going to be in conversation with Karen Das. And that's on the 3rd of March, I believe.
Yeah. And so with the Time Out Books convo, is that something anyone can come along to?
Yeah.
Just rock up?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's at 6:30. I think there's like an RSVP thing on an Eventbrite, but I don't think it's... Like, I think people can come.
No one's going to be bouncing you at the door.
I don't think anyone's going to be on the door, so I think we're sweet.
I'll link that as well, just in case anyone needs details, like addresses and whatever. Okay, amazing. And have you got anything else to plug? Where can people buy the book?
Oh, good question. I know that it's available at Unity in Auckland and Time Out and potentially Women's Books and also Paper Plus, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, I wasn't really sure about New Zealand distribution at first. I didn't actually know it was going to be available in New Zealand until it popped up randomly. So that was a nice surprise.
Lucky us. It's a really, really good read, especially if you've been struggling to get into books again. Short stories are a really great way in because you can sort of read them on your lunch break, or you know, you don't have to keep a long plot in your head.
And
and
you get sort of a full reading experience.
Yeah,
within about, I mean, some of them are quite short, so you can have a full sort of experience within 10 minutes if you're waiting for somebody in the car.
Yeah, exactly. Do you enjoy writing short stories?
Love short stories. I've been trying to write a novel, and keep finding myself going back to them because I just love reading them too.
So. Yeah,
yeah,
amazing. Well. You guys listening can pick up a copy of Delivery Woman by Eva Wiles, who we've just been talking to for the past half an hour. Very lovely conversation about books and writing and reading and Where Not to Swim in Wellington. And that will all be up on the Becast this afternoon. Thank you so much, Eva. Really, really great having you in the studio.
Thank you for having me. It's been lovely.
Yeah, enjoy talking to Saray. That'll be fantastic.
It will be. Thank you.
It's Plus One's 21st birthday.
And they're celebrating by curating a tasty lineup of international acts over the next month.
Catch the following acts live at the Power Station.
Transvision Vamp, Saturday, February 28th.
Spandau Ballet legend Tony Hadley, Friday, March 6th.
And Fun Lovin' Criminals on Saturday, March 7th.
And then at the Hollywood Avondale on Friday, March 13th, witness the legendary singer-songwriter Lloyd Cole.
Join the Plus One party and grab your tickets now at plusone.co.nz.
This weird rash is a mystery. I've asked my flatmates, my co-workers, my lecturer, can you help me, Dr. Cat? Oh, useless.
Those around you letting you down medically? CareHQ can help. Convenient online help from a friendly team of sexual health nurses, Sunday to Friday, 9 a.m. till 5 p.m. Plus, use the discount code BFM25 and get $10 off your nurse consult. For easy access to expert GPs, registered nurses, online treatment and advice, visit carehq.co.nz.
Holy hell. The Datsuns are making their long-awaited return for an epic homecoming tour. Catch them live at the Hollywood Avondale, Saturday, March 21st.
Back for the first time since 2018, the Datsuns will fulfill the promise of a raw and raucous live show in anticipation of their forthcoming new album. The Datsuns, Saturday, March 21st at the Hollywood Avondale. Get your tickets from Under the Radar.